We are holding on page Chof in Sanhedrin, Ois Men. We learned yesterday about the story with Rav Shimon, with Rish Lakish and the two Chachamim who were going to declare an Ibuyar. We said maybe they're going to declare choices. We said they were just going to make the calculations. Whatever the case, the point is we said that Rish Lakish didn't like the fact that they had ignored what he saw as Averis by some Jewish farmers that they had passed by, and so he called them Kesher Rishoyim. He called them a group or a conspiracy of Rishoyim, and argued that maybe we shouldn't trust their calculations or their determinations as far as Iver Hashanah. And Rabbi Yechanan tells him, Da'oka, that's a problem that you should call them by such a name. So the Gemara says, my Kesher Rishoyim, where does this expression Kesher Rishoyim come from in the first place that we should say that we ignore that when it comes to halacha? So this goes back to a story from the times of King Chizkiah. So we're going to have later in the Masechta, when we get to Peretz Chelek, we're going to be learning in great detail about the story of Chizkiyahu and the story of Sennacherib's attempted attack on Yerushalayim at his time. To make a very long story short, Chizkiyahu was the king of Yehuda. In his times, the Aseres HaShavatim were taken into Golos by Sennacherib. You have at that point just left Yehuda and Binyamin and whatever remnants of the other Shavatim lived together with them. A few years later, Sennacherib comes back attempting to do the same thing to Eretz Yehuda. He conquers many of the cities over there. He besieges Yerushalayim. He sends his messenger, Rav Shakeh, who we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, was actually a Yisrael Mumer. He was a Yehud Shmadzich, Rahman al-Atlan, to argue all kinds of arguments and accusations against Chizkiyahu. What are you trusting in him? He can't help you. And what do you think you're going to trust in Hashem? Rav Shakeh is saying Hashem can't help you either, and so on and so forth, and all kinds of terrible blasphemous things like that. The upshot is that Sennacherib and everybody were very worried. It's true that B'derech HaTeva, there's no way they're going to be able to withstand them. The Navi Yeshaya sends Chizkiyahu a long nevuah to the effect that, don't worry, Hashem has planned this whole thing out. In the first place, Hashem is going to defeat Sennacherib, and his whole army is going to be destroyed, and you're going to be safe, and you'll have those spoils, and so on and so forth. We'll have all the details are going to be much later in the Masechta, and Peretz Chelek, we'll talk about it in great detail over there. Many of Yeshaya's nevuahs, actually, are about Sennacherib. And that whole battle, we're even going to learn later on that it could have been, that could have been Milchamas Gog and Magog, and Chizkiyahu could have been Mashiach, except that he didn't completely live up to it, as we'll talk about that. Anyway, now we're going to see in our Gemara that not everybody was united on Chizkiyahu's side against Sennacherib. There was a group led by, as we're going to say now, Shevna, who actually wanted to surrender to Sennacherib and go along with what he wants. So the Gemara says Shevna, so that now you have a character mentioned in Melachim and in Yeshaya, named Shevna. You actually have, in some places it calls him Shevna HaSofer, and in other places it calls Shevna Asher al Abayis, which means that he was in charge of the palace. He was like the chief of staff. Tosfos discusses elsewhere whether that was the same person and just he changed jobs, or whether it's maybe two different people. Whatever the case, we're talking about one over here who, as we're going to say, was a great Talmid Chacham and had thousands of Talmidim, but he was also a Rosha. And he was opposed to Chizkiyahu. Our shop points out on other days, according to the fact that in some places we call him Shevna HaSofer, that implies that he was a great Talmud Chacham, similar to the way Ezra HaSofer bears the title HaSofer. HaSofer doesn't just mean the scribe, as in he knows how to write Sifrei Torah and other such things. It means a prominent Talmud Chacham. So this Shevna was like that as well. So Shevna have a Dardash B'tleser Ribavosa. So Shevna, when he would darshan in Torah, when he would teach Torah, there would be 13 myriads listening to him. A myriad of Reboy is 10,000. So 13 times 10,000, we had 130,000 people listening to his shiurim in Torah. Chizkiyah, when he would teach Torah, there were only 110,000. So Shevna, in other words, had the majority of the people on his side. Ki asa Sennacherib v'tzor alo Yerushalayim. So when Sennacherib came and was besieging Yerushalayim, threatening to conquer it, because of Shevna Piska, this Shevna wrote a note, shod a begira, and he shot it with an arrow. He attached the note to an arrow, and he sent it, and he shot it out of Yerushalayim so that it would land in Sennacherib's camp, and the message would get to Sennacherib. He writes in there, Shevna v'siyayti hishlimu, Shevna and his faction and his group are ready to surrender, are ready to make peace with you. Chizkiya v'Sayaita lo yishlimu, but Chizkiya and his group are not willing to surrender. In other words, what Shevna was expecting and hoping is that when Sancheirav wins, as B'derech HaTeva he would, then he would take Chizkiya and execute him as a rebel, and Shevna himself would be made the new king. And he's telling Sancheirav, I have a huge number of people on my side who are willing to go along with that as well. Now, Marsha points out, it's not just that he's talking against Chizkiyahu, it also comes out that what he's doing is against Hashem as well. In a sense, it's a form of Avodah Zarah. Because again, we see that Sancheirav is sending this message saying that Hashem can't save you, so if Shevna is willing to surrender, it means he's willing to go along with that idea that Hashem is not any more powerful than Lahavdol, the gods of the various other nations that Sancheirav had conquered by that point. So therefore, it's tantamount to Avodah Zarah at this point. So Shenemar, and we find a pasuk where hundreds of years earlier, David had written a kapitel tilim, which expresses the, in Ruach HaKodesh what was going on over here. He's kinehine ha-reshoyim yidruchun keshes. Behold, the reshoyim are stepping on their bow. A bow is a very hard piece of wood, but you need to be flexible to shoot the arrow. So what they would do is they would step on the bow in order to bend it so it would shoot the arrow with maximum force. So we find in many places in Tanakh the expression for shooting an arrow is called stepping on the bow. So they're stepping on the bow, they're preparing to shoot their arrow. They're preparing their arrow on the bowstring. And as the pasuk continues, they want to shoot and kill the innocent, the tzaddikim. So we see that Shevna is using his arrow to try to have his master, to have his boss, Chizkiyahu, be killed using the Lashon Hara that he was sending with it, which often, Lashon Hara is also often compared to an arrow. The Medrash has an expression, for example, that Lashon Hara is in a way worse than an arrow. An arrow can only kill at most a few hundred feet away. Lashon Hara can kill people hundreds of miles away even. But yeah. Marsha points out the word yeser, which means a bowstring, is also related to the word yoser, as in more. So it means that Shevna is pointing out to Sancheirav, I have more people on my side than Sancheirav does. Therefore, you should find me to be your guy in your shalayim and get rid of Chizkiyahu. So have a commissary Chizkiya. So Chizkiya was very afraid. Omar, he thinks to himself, maybe indeed Hashem is going to go along with the majority. After all, we do know the Torah tells us Acher Adam Lahatas. So maybe Hashem is going to be willing to, maybe Hashem is going to accept what they're doing, and Hashem is going to make them successful and allow them to surrender to Sancheirav, and I'm going to be a goner. Kivin de Ruba, he thought to himself, Kivin de Ruba Mimsiri, once most of them are willing to surrender to Sancheirav, Iyunu Nami Mimsiri, then the rest of us are also going to end up getting handed over to them, and many people are going to be killed, and Malchus Beis David is going to cease to exist, Chas V'Shalom, because this Shevna, who's a stranger from some other family, is going to end up taking over. Bon Novi va'omalei, so the Novi Yeshaya comes and tells him, you don't have what to worry about. Lois Soimrin Kesher L'choyla Sheyema Ha'omazek Kosher. Don't say a kesher, a bond, also kesher in Tanakh also means a conspiracy, to everything that these people say is a bond. In other words, you're thinking because these 130,000 people, followers of Shevna, are all bonded together and following him, therefore you're thinking that that's a strong bond and Hashem is going to go along with them because they're the majority. No, kuloy or kuloymar, kesher reshoyim hu, you should know this, the bond of reshoyim, the kesher reshoyim, ain't a min aminian, and a bond of reshoyim like that does not count, even if they're the majority. Nevertheless, Hashem is not on their side, and therefore they're outnumbered. You may have the minority number of people, but you have Hashem on your side, and they do not, and therefore your minority is really a majority against theirs. We ignore their seeming majority. One interesting point that's mentioned in this connection is, we do tack a fine. It's brought, for example, that even when the people are worshipping Avodah Zarah, as long as they have Achdus, then Hashem favors them. It mentions, for example, in the Medrash, that in the times of Achav, the people were worshipping Avodah Zarah, and yet Hashem made them successful in their battles because they had Achdus. But the difference is, one difference is that here, even though all of them are agreeing with Shevna that they should surrender to Sancheirav, but they're not really ba'achdus about it. Each subgroup within that has their own ideas about why and what they're going to get out of it and so forth. So it's al-derech, like a famous explanation. It says in Pirkei Avos, you know, you have machlokas korach b'chol adosai, which is a machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim. So you have the famous expression, you have the famous question, why machlokas korach b'chol adosai? Why didn't it say machlokas korach on Moshe? That's who Korach was fighting against. And the answer is because even within Korach b'chol adosai, there were many different factions that were arguing and opposed to one another. They all agreed that were against Moshe and Aaron, but they all had, each of them had their own agenda. So therefore, according to that, then the same vort over here would be that the Navi in Hashem's name is telling Chizkiah, don't worry, that faction, they don't really have such avas yisrael between one another. They're all individual groups of Rishoyim, and therefore it's Einam and Aminian, and you don't have to worry about them being a majority against you.
There can only be one
Kohen Gadol. He was talking about a king, but yeah, but well, there it was, yeah, Korach was arguing there should be multiple Kohen Gadolim, yeah. It's an interesting idea. It says someplace, it says that Korach had the notion, I think Maharsha mentions it, I think on Baba Basra, that Korach had the notion that there should be one Kohen Gadol for each month. Al-Derech HaKiyah, 12 Shvatim, 12 months, so there should be a new Kohen Gadol each month, which is why we learned in Baba Basra that every month they're stirred around in Gehenna and they say Moshe Emes for Sarasa Emes, because every month they realize this mistake of theirs over and over, yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
In Malachim Aleph, like we had just learned, that there were like two Kohen Gadolim until Shema kind of fired.
That's a very good question. The answer is, basically, that's my daughter. Basically, there was only one Kohen Gadol at a time, but sometimes it can happen that the Kohen Gadol is unavailable. He's Tomei, he's sick or whatever, and then you have the Sedan, the deputy Kohen Gadol takes over. So that's what it means when it says there were two Kohen and Gadolim. Doesn't mean that both of them were functioning at the same time. It means there was one of them, and then if he was unavailable, then the other one would take over. Good question now. Okay. Moving along then. So the point is Hashem is telling Chizkiyahu, don't worry about that majority, if not really a majority after all. But in that connection, by the way, there's an interesting story involving the Baal Shem of Mitzvah. The story is told about the Baal Shem of Michelstadt, who was a great tzaddik who lived in Germany about 200 years ago. I've also heard it told about other Gedolei Yisrael as well, that when he was a boy, the local poritz asks that he hears about this very wise boy, this very smart Jewish boy, and he wants him to come for a visit. To make a long story short, the poritz tells all his servants, I want to make you self-scarce and let the boy figure out himself where in the palace he should go, where in my palace he should come to find me. And sure enough, the boy comes to the right place. So the poritz asks him how to figure it out. So the boy tells him, because I saw that all the other windows were open and only one had the curtains drawn, so I realized you're hiding behind it. So then the poritz says to him, now let's say I had my attendants out here, and let's say you would ask them and one group tells you to go right and the other one left, which one will you follow? And the boy says, Acharam Lahat, they said, go according to the majority. So the poritz tells him, well, in that case, aren't we goyim a majority against you Jews? So why don't you follow us? And the boy, Yitzchak Leib answers, that's only when you don't know. For example, I came to the palace. I don't know where you are, so then I'd have to go Acher Dam Lahatis. When we know the truth, the truth itself is the Roiv, then you don't follow any other Roiv. So therefore, we know the Torah is true. We don't have any reason to follow the Roiv of the Goyim. So in a similar vein, a somewhat similar vein over here, in other words, this is the Kesher Rishoyim. In Aminian, the fact that they're saying the wrong thing doesn't mean that we should follow them.
Another thing is that the Goyim, they're also kind of like...
they also have factions among themselves. It's true, yes. There are so many groups among them. That's also true, yeah. Okay, good. But especially Maharsha says the point is they don't have Hashem on their side, and therefore you're really the majority after all. So this is where the expression Kesher Rishoyim comes from, and that's why the Shlokish used that expression. Well, the Gemara continues, what happened? This Shevna still thought that he has the majority on his side, and he's going to end up winning out over Chizkiyah. Holach lachs of lekever b'kibre beis David. He went to carve himself out a tomb among the kvarim of the house of David. He thought that he's going to be successful in becoming king, a vassal king under Sancheirev, and therefore that eventually he'll be king, and eventually he'll be buried in the area in the area where the kings are buried in Yerushalayim. The Gemara elsewhere mentions, B'chlal, people are not allowed to be buried in Yerushalayim because you want to keep it a place that's Tahor, with the exception of Malchus Beis David are allowed to be buried over there. So he thought he's going to be in their company. So he went to carve himself out a tomb. Bon Navi, the Omaloi, so the Navi, Yeshaya, comes and tells him, there's a whole Nevuah in Yeshaya addressed specifically to this Shevna. He says to him, Malacha Foy or Milacha Foy, what do you have over here and who do you have over here? In other words, what do you think that you're going to become the king? you're not of the caliber to be a king, and mi l'chafoy, and who do you have over here? Are you even related to anybody over here? You're not. Ki chatzavta l'chafoy cover, that you're carving yourself out a tomb over here, that after 120 you're expecting to be buried in this place after you've had a long, successful reign. So it's not going to happen. Hashem, and the Navi goes on to tell him, you're actually going to wind up going into Golos, as we'll continue saying. Very interestingly, they found in archaeological digs in Yerushalayim some 150 years ago, they found a tomb cut out in the rock that had an inscription on it that said that it belongs to something Yahu Asher Al HaBoyis. Whatever comes before the Yahu, the first couple of letters over there, are erased. So they came up with it after thinking about it a while. They came up with a theory that maybe the name was actually Shivan Yahu, which would be an alternate form of the name Shevna, and this is the very tomb that he carved out over here for himself, which the Navi is criticizing them for. We do know, for again, he is mentioned in the pasuk as Asher Al HaBoyis in the introduction to this nevuah, so it would fit if we assume that Shevna and Shivan Yahu are alternate forms of the same name. Whatever the case, so the Navi continues to him, Hine Hashem Metal Telcha. Behold, Hashem is going to move you around. You're going to end up having to move. You're not going to stay here. You're going to end up having to go into Golos. Taltela Gover, with the moving around, with the dislocation of Gover. So in the simple sense, Taltela Gover means a powerful dislocation. But Gover also means a man. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Tiltula de Gover de Koshim de Itza. A man being dislocated and having to wander from his place is harder on him than for a woman. One reason for that, Maharsha points out, is because people more naturally have rachmonos on a woman. They see a woman by herself, then they might be criminals who would doubt to use that as more of a possibility to take advantage of her, but more normal people will have more rachmonos on a woman precisely because they realize that she's less able to fend for herself. As opposed to a man, they're not gonna bother. So Taltela Gover, therefore the man has a worse tilt, or when he's dislocated and having to wander from his place, he's worse off. So the Navi is telling Shevna, you're gonna be like that. Your dislocation from your shalim is gonna be much worse. Ben Yehoyada points out another meaning of it can be as well, as far as Gilgulin. Now we consider if a neshama didn't complete what it had to on earth, it didn't do enough mitzvahs or did averus or whatever, then the person, the neshama, has to come back. For a man, says Ben Yehoyada, that's much more likely to happen. After all, men have more mitzvahs than women, and they have more opportunities for doing averus than women. Therefore, so Tula de Gavra, therefore the tiltal, the dislocation of a neshama that was in a man, that may have, is much more likely to come back as a Gilgul than a woman. So the Navi is telling him you're going to end up having this powerful, tremendous dislocation of a man. And the pasuk continues, v'oitcha otoy. And Hashem continues, v'oitcha otoy. So in the simple sense, oitcha otoy means like Hashem is going to wrap you up and throw you out of here. Ot oite, meloshon like oita ur kasalma. But Amr of Yosef Reb Chanina, Malamet Shepocha Boit Tzaras. This also means that Hashem punished this Shevna with Tzaras, that Tzaras broke out on him. Why? The pasuk says that a mitzvah has to wrap himself, he has to cover his face all the way down to his upper lip, his mustache, and therefore we see that the word ota is used in connection with tzaras. Why does he get tzaras? So Maharsha points out, first of all, because we find, based on a pasuk, that when a person has evil thoughts against Hashem, then it can cause him to get tzaras. We find a couple of generations earlier, Uzziyahu, who was Chizkiyahu's great-grandfather, had gotten tzaras for trying to bring keteras in the Beth Mikdash when he shouldn't. And the Medrash Darshan's a pasuk that refers to somebody who has evil thoughts as referring to this Uzziah. Well, then Shevna also had evil thoughts against Hashem, so he got tzaras. Iyun Yaakov points out another reason is because he made a machloikus against Chizkiyahu, and as the Gemara is going to tell us near the end of the Masechta, that a Baal machloikus gets tzaras. He also spoke Lashon Hara against Chizkiyahu, and we know Lashon Hara is one of the famous causes of tzaras, so there are many reasons why he deserved that. Malchus didn't get tzaras specifically, but yeah.
But if it was for evil thoughts against Hashem, he wasn't really doing evil thoughts against Hashem. He thought he would be the king, and that he.
But that's what we're saying before. That since Sancheriv's whole argument against Chizkiyahu was based on that Hashem can't save you. Hashem is no more powerful than the gods of the other nations. Then for Shevna to agree with that, you know what? Then we have no choice to surrender. Amounts to fighting against Hashem. Okay. The pasuk continues in Yeshaya's nevuah against Shevna. He says, "Sonof yitznofcha tznefa." Hashem will. Sonof is the simple meaning of sonof means also like to wrap you up, like to crumple you up, kind of. So Hashem will like ball you up and crumple you up. Hadur, like a person surrounded by a row, meaning of soldiers, el eretz rachvas yadayim, and you will end up in a large land, meaning that you're going to be taken into Golus in a whole other country. So the simple meaning of tzonef yitznefot snefa padur means that Hashem will surround you. The word tzonef yitznefcha is related to the word mitznefes, like a turban, like for example the Kohen Gadol wore, which wraps around the head. So therefore it means you're going to be surrounded by lines of soldiers who are going to take you into Golus to a wide land, to a foreign land, and there you're going to die. You're never going to come back to your Yerushalayim. So the Navi tells him this is what's going to happen to you, a goyimer. So what are we darshaning from that? We'll talk about in a minute. Tosfos points out, by the way, another meaning of kadur. El Eretz, Rashi is saying kadur, the kaf is a prefix meaning like, and dur means a row, meaning like rows of soldiers. Tosfos points out a couple of other explanations. The word kadur, the dur, can also mean meloshin dira, meloshin a ger who has to live in a foreign country. So kadur, you're going to have to be like a foreigner who's expelled from his country and has to wander and live in another country. A third possibility, Tosfos points out, is the kof is not a prefix, but rather it's part of the shodesh of the word, and the word kadur, like it does in modern Hebrew, means a bull. So in other words, you're going to be balled up and thrown around like around a wide land. In other words, you're going to be kicked around from one place to another, like where a ball gets thrown and kicked around. Anyway, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Now the pasuk finishes off when after the Navi tells him that you're going to be we're going to wind up al eretz rachvas yadayim. The pasuk continues. The Shomam, it actually quotes the end of the pasuk, the Shomam Malkvos Kvedecha, there is where we're going to be the chariots of your glory, Kloin Beis Adinecha, the shame of the house of your master. In other words, Poshet Pshat is the Navi is telling him that you thought you're going to have this glory and chariots and everything, but instead, because you tried to humiliate your master, Siskiyahu, and take over his kingship, therefore you're going to wind up instead being punished for that. So now, the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Dickish lasses dula la'atzmai. This Shevna wanted to bring greatness for himself, the kolon leveis adonav, and he wanted to bring embarrassment and shame to the house of his master, to Chizkiyahu. Lefichach nepach kavod la kolon. Therefore, he got the opposite, and his kavod wound up turning into humiliation. What happened now? We'll see in the continuation of the story. We'll find that. We'll see now what happened to him. We'll get back, by the way, in a minute to this pasuk. Sonef yitznef chatznefa. Marsha has a very interesting explanation of it, but let's first learn the next lines, and then we'll go back and say we'll see what Marsha says about it. So the Gemara continues. Ki avin nofik ihu. So now, when Shevna was about to leave Yerushalayim, and he was going to be accompanied by all of his followers, they were all going to surrender in a group to Sancheiriv. Also Gavriel came, Malach Gavriel, achde ledasha ba'afei mashir yaseh, and closed the door and held it closed in the face of his whole group. So Shevna went out first, figuring he's going to lead them all towards Sancheiriv, and meanwhile the door is shut, and only he went out, and he stuck outside with all of his followers left inside. Iyun Yaakov points out that Gavriel is responsible for people who have bad machshavos against Hashem. Also, we had earlier in Iyun Yaakov, earlier in the previous perek, there was a piece over there with the Sanhedrin being reluctant to judge Yana Yamelech's slave, and Shimon at Shatach says to them that a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Baal machshavos will punish you, and Gavriel struck them down. So we see that Gavriel deals with Baal machshavos, and again we're saying that Shevna was a Baal machshavos. He was having evil thoughts against Chizkiyahu and against Hashem. So therefore, it's Gabriel that got involved over here. So now, when he appears in front of the soldiers over there, of Asher, Omrule, they said, Mashu Yosef Hecha. So where's your whole group? You told us, Shevna Vasayayti Eshlimu. You told us you have a whole group behind you. Where are they? So Shevna doesn't know what to do. Omrule, he tells them, Merodu Vahadrubi. They rebelled against me and they went back. Or the Girsin, the printed Gemara, Omer Hadron B, he said, they went back on me. Either way, in other words, he's saying, I thought I had them behind me, but eventually they chickened out and they left. Omrulay, so the soldiers said to Shevna, in Cain, well, in that case, Achochikam Chaifas one, well, then you stand joking at us. You're claiming that you came with this whole huge group, we're going to surrender, and then we can use you as the new rulers and the new whatever of Yerushalayim after we take the other ones into Golos. Now it turns out that you stand making a joke and you're a loner over here and you're a practical joker. We're not going to take that. Nakvuhu ba'kevav, so they made holes in his heels. They punched holes in his heels as a punishment. Utlauhu bezanvei suseihem, they tied his heels to the tails of their horses, and they're dragging him around on the thorns and the thistles, and that was his punishment, and that was his torture for what he tried to do to Chizkiah. So instead, that's what we're saying, instead of getting honor, he ended up getting a huge humiliation and embarrassment. Ben Yehoyada points out, you know, you have that he tried, we just said before in the Gemara, he tried to make himself great and lower Chizkiah, I mean, he was trying to turn things around. Chizkiah is the king, he's only a minister of the king. He tried to turn things around and make himself above Chizkiah, and the result is that now he's being tortured and dragged around upside down with his heels up and his head down. Marsha points out that, you know, you have this hinted at in that pasuk that we quoted before, Tzonef Yitznef Chatz Yitznaf Chatznefa. Marsha points out the word sonoif has several meanings. It can mean something that surrounds, like we said, the mitznefes. Therefore, it can also be used to refer to the turban or the crown of a king which surrounds his head. You have the pasuk, for example, utznif melucha, which refers to a crown or a diadem of kingship. But the word snif can also, the word sonef yitznaf patznefa can also be related to the word sonef, which means the neighing of a horse. So therefore, it all fits together over here. He thought that he's going to get himself sniffed as in the crown of kingship instead of Chizkiah. In the end, and he wanted to remove Chizkiah from his position, and he's going to have the sniff malucha. Instead, what he has is son of Yitznaf Chatznefa, that the horses are neighing while they're dragging him around on all the thorns and everything. And that's also Eretz Rachvas Yadayim, like a ball which is thrown around in other words, Marsha says, in a wide area. If you have like a wide open field, then a ball is rolling around there, and it'll roll and roll and roll and go to who knows where. There's nothing to stop it. The same way over here, we're talking about that he's getting dragged around without a stop. Preposterous, I guess, until they killed him. I don't know. And in any case, he didn't get buried in that tomb of his that he carved out for himself, which is why the Novi was telling him, "What are you doing? So what are you doing carving out that tomb? You're not going to be buried in it anyway."
So basically, there's Mida Keneged Mida.
So Mida Keneged Mida, pretty much, yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Elazar, Shevna Baal Hanah Hoya. This Shevna was a Baal Hanah. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says two possibilities. It can mean that he was very much into his hana, into his pleasures of the world, whereas a Talmud Chacham is not supposed to be. We just had in last week's Pirkei Avos. For example, you know, you should eat pas v'melach, drink only a minimum amount of water, not wine, for example, sleep on the ground. A person wants to be a real Talmud Chacham. He can't be wallowing in luxuries. So the first explanation, Baal Hana, means he was doing just that. He was very much into his luxuries and his titles. Rashi's second explanation is that he was involved in Mishkav Zohar, which is a very serious Avera. Marshall explains that we're going to learn from the pasuk of that, but Marshall explains, we just said before he was a great Talmud Chacham and he had over 100,000 Talmidim, so how did he become so bad? How did he become this person who rebelled against Hashem and rebelled against Malchus Beis David and so on and so forth? And the answer is because to begin with, he was a Baal Hanah. He never learned Torah, L'shem Shemayim in the first place. He wasn't Memes Atzmei Aleh, like a Talmud Chacham is supposed to be, and therefore his Torah was flawed, and therefore he wound up becoming this Rosha and ending up with this humiliation and this bitter end of his. So how do we know he's a Baal Hanah? K'siv ha'cha leich boyal ha'soichin, when Hashem tells the Navi to go to Shevna and give him this harsh nevuah that we said before, Hashem tells him, go to this soichin. Now, the simple meaning of a soichin means like a minister or something. But the Gemara is darshaning, o'ch'tiv ha'sim v'ati la'melech seichenes. We had the piece with Avishag Ashunamis, who was a seichenes, who was a bed warmer for David HaMelech. So we see the shodosh soichin means to warm. We find the other places in Tanakh where that shodosh is used. So therefore, so this Shevna was warming himself up with his taivas or his mishkav zocher, as the case may be. And therefore, Hashem addresses him as a soichin hazeh. And that's just the reason why the Gemara is doubting that, is because since it continues, El Shevna Asher Al Abayis was saying that his position is Asher Al Abayis. Why do you need to mention Asoichan Azeh in the first place? And the reason is, what we're saying, Hashem is telling him, go to the Soichan, this Baal Hanah, this guy who doesn't understand how a Talmid Chacham should be living his life, and namely, Shevna Asher Al Abayis, who even though he presents himself as a great Talmid Chacham and has so many followers, but nevertheless, he's a no good name. We quoted the Pasuk in Tillim before, and we said that hints at the story with Shevna, where he used an arrow to try and send out his message of Lashon Hara to fight against Chizkiya. So now the Gemara continues, darshaning the next Pasuk in Tillim over there. The Pasuk continues, Ki hashosos yehoreisun. If the shosos are destroyed, and we're going to explain now what shosos means, tzaddik ma'po'al, what will Hashem, what will the tzaddik have accomplished? So we're going to explain, what this pasuk means and what this has to do with this. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eina. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eina argue what the deeper meaning of the pasuk is in terms of the story with Shevna. Chad Omar, one of them says, David is saying, Ilu Chizkiya v'sayayta neharosin, if Chizkiya and his group are going to be destroyed, which we're going to explain soon in the Gemara, that the word shoses can be hinting at them, tzaddik ma'po'al, then what would Hashem, the ultimate tzaddik of the world, have accomplished? In other words, where would be Hashem's niflois, where Hashem does good, where Hashem pays good for the tzaddikim, and if Chizkiyahu and his group ends up getting destroyed, if Shevna has his way, then where would Hashem's niflois be? Then how would we be able to say that Hashem gave Chizkiyahu the reward that he deserves? So therefore, in other words, David's saying, Hashem, you can't allow that to happen. You can't allow Kihini Hashem, Yidushon Keshes, to be successful. You have to prevent Shevna from accomplishing what he's setting out to do. That's one explanation. The Chad Omer, the other one between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eina, says it means Shoses refers to Ilu Beis Hamikdash Yehoris, if the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed, which if Sancheiriv is successful at conquering Yerushalayim, then he will destroy the Beis Hamikdash. Rashi points out, Bat Soses Shal Shevna, this would be part of Shevna's advice that Sancheiriv should destroy the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, this is also, I guess, when we said before that he had machshavos, that he had evil thoughts against Hashem, that's included in that he wanted Sancheiriv to destroy Hashem's Beis Hamikdash. Anyway, if that were to happen, and Shoses, as we're going to say, refers to the Beis Hamikdash also, Tzadik Ma'po'al, then what would Hashem do? Again, where are Hashem's Niflois, and where are the Socher that Hashem is supposed to pay for Tzadikim? So either way, in other words, according to either explanation, that David is saying with Nevuah hundreds of years earlier, I see what this Shevna is going to try to do against Malchus Beis David, Hashem, you can't allow that to happen. The Ula Omar, Ula says a third meaning in the pasuk. The word shoses can also mean thoughts, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. The Ula Omar, so Ula says yet another explanation. Ilu machshavosav shal oisei rosha einam neharoses. On the contrary, David is saying when he said ki hashoses yehareson, he means the shoses, the thoughts of Shevna have to be destroyed. If they're not destroyed, tzaddik ma'po'al, then what will the tzaddik Hashem have accomplished in the world? What would be, or actually Rashi says that in this explanation, tzaddik actually refers to Chizkiyahu. The tzaddik Chizkiyahu, ma'po'al, what would he have accomplished? Where would be the reward that he deserves for his accomplishment? Which in which case, shoses can mean thoughts. As the Gemara, as shoses can mean thoughts, as in Rashi points out, you have a pasuk v'lo shos liba gam lozois, where it says that Pare ignored makas dam, he didn't pay attention to it, so we see that the word shoses can mean thoughts. Rashi points out, to Marsha rather, points out that really in the first two explanations, we're saying tzaddik ma'po'al refers to Hashem, and only in Ula's explanation are we saying tzaddik refers to Chizkiyah. Marsha says in all three of them, actually, tzaddik might refer to Chizkiyah. Or it might mean both. In other words, Hashem set up the world on the tzaddikim. So, in other words, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Bishlim l'mandam eva machshavos of shalosei rasha." If you say like Ula that ki hashoses yehareson refers to the thoughts of that rasha Shevna, which David is asking Hashem, we have to get rid of them. Ha'inuchti ki hashoses yehareson. That's what it means. In other words, how does the actual pasuk is saying that the shoses must be destroyed. And therefore that means they must be, where the shoses would be the thoughts. And we find that thoughts can be referred with the shoda shos, as in the pasuk, Vayoshes Dovidas Advorama Eila Alibori. Now there's actually no such pasuk, Marasha points out. So there's a possibility by Yosem, Dovinus and Dvorama Eli Libra, but that doesn't help us, because Yosem, the Shodesh is Sim, which is not the same as the Shodesh Shos. So that's why it's in parenthesis. It's not in the printed Gemara. It's a mistake, says Marshal. It's called, rather, in other words, Marsha says that, so first of all, again, Rashi had pointed out a pasuk by, for the shos liver gamazos, but Marsha points out that also the word shos literally means to place, so it means, in other words, an actual maisa. So here we're talking about Shevna, most of what he accomplished was only a machshava. He didn't really get very far with his maisa. Nevertheless, especially when it comes to Avodah Zarah, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, thoughts of Avodah Zarah, Hashem treats like actual action of Avodah Zarah, machshava ra, when it comes to Avodah Zarah. And therefore Hashem considers these thoughts, these Avodah Zarah thoughts of Shevna, as though they were a Maisa, and therefore they can be described with the word Shosos, which comes from a word that means to place, to actually do. So that's something else. Goyim in general says Machshava Ra, Akash Baruch Mitzar for the Maisa. Right, but the Gemara in Kedushin explains that by Jews, generally speaking, Machshava Ra in Akash Baruch Mitzar, a person thought to do an Avera and didn't end up doing it, Hashem doesn't blame him for it, with the exception of Avodah Zarah. So if we say that shosos means thought, then it's easy to understand how we get that into the pasuk. Well, the mam doma beis hamikdash nami. Even if we say that hashosos refers to the beis hamikdash, and David is saying you can't allow Hashem, you can't allow if the shosos are going to be destroyed, then what happens to the tzaddik? So then, fine. Ditznan, we know that shosos refers to the beis hamikdash. Ditznan, we have a mishnah. Evan hoisa shomi most neviim harishonim, that there was a stone sticking out of the floor in the kodesh hakodashim that was there from the time of the Uliyas neviim. Ushsia hoisa nikris. This was the evan shsia. This is the famous evan shsia that was in the kodesh hakodashim in the first beis hamikdash. The Orin stood on top of it. In the second beis hamikdash, they didn't have the Orin over there, and therefore there was just the evan shsia sticking out of the floor. Some say that Evan Shsia is the rock that's nowadays in the dome of the rock that's on the Harabayas. Others say that it's a different part of the floor elsewhere over there. Whatever the case, we see that Evan Shsia, and then the word Shsia means foundation, because Rashi refers to the Gemara, tells us in the Gemara there in Yuma, that the world was founded on it. Hashem first created that, and then created the rest of the world from there. So the word Shosos therefore can refer to the Beis Hamikdash, of which the centerpiece is the Evan Shsia. In fact, Marsha points out, so the question is, Elolamanda Omer, Hiski of Seyaito, but if you say that Tiashoses Yahoresin refers to that David is asking, if you allow the Shoses, Hiski and company, to be destroyed, then Sadik Mapal, Hecha Ashtuchan Sadiki de Ikru Shoses. Where do we find Sadikim are called Shoses that David should be using that expression? And the answer is Dichtiv, as you have in Chana's Shira, Ki La Hashem Mitzukei Oretz, to Hashem belong the foundations of the world, Vayoshes Aleihem Tevel, and Hashem placed the world on them. So we can say that Tzadik over here refers to, according to Rashi, refers to Hashem founding the world and setting it up, and therefore Shoses would refer to Hashem, the other who founded the world. So then, Ki Hashoses, if the foundation of the world, the Tzadikim, are allowed to be destroyed, namely Chizkiyah and company, Tzadik Mapal, what will Hashem have accomplished? Marsha points out, it can mean that the tzaddik also refers to Chizkiyah. It can be, Kiyashoses Yehoresin, if Hashem allows tzaddikim, like Chizkiyah and company, to be destroyed, tzaddik mapal, then what did Hashem accomplish by even creating the world in the first place, founded on tzaddikim, if Hashem is going to allow them to be destroyed like that? So in other words, all three opinions can be made to work with the pasuk Kiyashoses Yehoresin. The boys say mehacha, or we have a different source where the word shoses can refer to tzaddikim, because the pasuk says hifli etzah higdil tushia. Hashem has made a wondrous counsel of Torah. Hashem has made great tushia, which is another word for Torah. And the word tushia we would understand as being from the same shoda shoses, which means a foundation. The whole world is founded on Torah, and therefore the people who learn Torah, like Chizkiyahu did, are called shoses. So that's another source that we can say that Chizkiyah and company should be called Shoses. So the Gemara continues in this vein, since we talk about Tushia referring to Torah. Amar Rav Chanan, Lama, this is very appropriate before the Yom Tov Matan's Man Matan Torah Seinu. Lama Nikoshma Tushia. Why is Torah called Tushia? Mipneshi Makeshes Toichel Adam, because it weakens a person's strength. So there's a few explanations that Mefarshim say what that means. After all, we know the Torah, on the other hand, the Torah gives a person strength. Torah is called Oiz, for example. So it can mean it weakens a person's Gashmius. We have, for example, the famous story of the Rish Lakish, that as soon as he accepted on himself to learn Torah, he lost a certain degree of his Gashmius stick of strength, and he wasn't able to jump across the river anymore. So it can mean that. The Shalom HaKadosh brings a point that there's a difference in that regard between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. Torah Shebaalpeh, you have to put in so much analysis to it, so therefore that makes a person weak, the tremendous effort with it, whereas Torah strengthening a person then would refer to Torah Shebichsav. And you have a number of different points in it as well. It also, again, it weakens a person's tivus. It means, well, Torah is a ruchniistic thing, a person's goof is gashmiistic, so therefore, as you have the expression in the Zohar that's brought in many places in the Chassidus, tuk for de gufa chosha de nishmasa, the strength of the body equals a weakening of the neshama, and vice versa, so therefore to have a stronger neshama and a greater ability to learn Torah, there has to be a weakening of a person's gashmius and his tivus and all that, etc. So that's one meaning of Toshia. Davar acha, Toshia shenitna b'chashayim b'nei asatan. Another meaning of Toshia is that it was given in secret because of the satan. So either we would be darshaning Toshia as if it was chashoy, because the tuf and the ches look very similar in shape, or it could be the tuf we're taking as referring to the word nosan, which was in fact in the word nosan you sometimes find in various places in Tanakh, that either the first or the last nun can drop out of the shirish. All you have is the word taste sometimes, two tufs. So therefore the tuf over here can be taken as referring to the word nosan, and shia then would refer to chashay. Now satan, Rashi points out, based on the Gemara and Shabbos, the Satan was accusing and saying the Torah shouldn't be given on earth, and the Luchos shouldn't be given to Moshe, and therefore Hashem had to, so to speak, do it in secret so the Satan wouldn't know what was going on. Especially it says about the Luchos Shnius that Hashem gave them in privacy so the Satan doesn't interfere. The Gemara in Shabbos tells, in the Sugya of Matan Torah over there, in Shabbos, the Gemara tells how Hashem kind of distracted the Satan and sent him someplace else so he wouldn't be around when the Torah is given. And then when he comes back, he asks Hashem, so where's the Torah? And Hashem says, I gave it on earth. I gave it to Moshe. Go ask him. And the Satan comes to Moshe, and Moshe plays dumb and pretends he doesn't know. So you see, the whole thing was done like to, in a way to evade the Satan. So he's not makatrig and say, how can boss of a dumb get the Torah? So that's another reason it's called Toshia. Davaracha, Toshia, Dvorim Shal Toihu, Sha'olam Meshutzas Aleihem. Another meaning of Toshia, we can break it up. The Tof and Vav represent the word Toihu, and the word Shia represents, again, the word Shosif, like we said before, that words of Toihu, words of emptiness, that the whole world is founded on them. Rashi explains, it means the Torah is words, after all. Words that have no substance to them, and yet the whole world is founded on, and yet the whole world stands on Torah. So that's one point. Another meaning can be that a person would be surprised, Maharsha says. A person might wonder, how could it be the whole world is founded on the Torah? But nevertheless, that's how it is. So it's also Dvarim Shel Toihu, things that a person would wonder about. The Yad Ramah points out another meaning of it as well. It can refer particularly to mitzvahs that we don't understand the reasons of. A person would look at them as toihu. They have no meaning. They're empty of any meaning, but those are fundamental things of the Torah, and the whole world stands on them. And Ben Yehoyada says it can also refer to parts of the Torah, as we're going to talk about much later in the Masechta. You have parts of the Torah that seem to be, on the face of it, completely devoid of meaning. Why does the Torah have to tell us, for example, about Timna being the Pilegesh of Alifaz and other psukim like that seem to have no purpose to them, and yet those are fundamentals of Torah. We learn tremendous things from them, and the Torah and the whole world is founded on such psukim as well. As the Rambam points out, really there's no difference in Kedusha between such psukim and, for example, Shema Yisrael. The whole thing is part of the same Torah that was given by the Eivishter. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola, Dalad 7. One of the main chidushim that we're going to have the Moshe Mashiach compared to Matan Torah is the Nisuin. The Medrash says that the Medrash compares like a king was Makadish a woman and gave her a small amount of presents. Then when he actually is going to go through with marriage, then he writes out a document that he's going to give her many more presents. The same way, the Medrash says, nowadays in Matan Torah, it was only like Erusin. It was only like chidushim, the first stage of marriage. So Hashem gave us at that point only the moon, and we have our calendars based on that. Achodesh Azalachem. But the Moshe Mashiach, the Medrash continues, there'll be the Nisuin, and then Hashem is going to give them everything, as the Pasuk then compares that the Maskilim, the people who work on learning Torah and understanding Torah, are going to be like brightness of the sky, and Kakachavim La'olam Vod. So that explains in a Sicha that we see, so the true, complete Yichud and unity of the Jewish people with Hashem, and become Echad Mamish. Even nowadays, we have Torah, Arayis of the Torah, the Kutcha Bichel, the Yisrael Kol Achad, but the Moshe Mashiach, it will be really Mamish, as in Yisrael, and that will be in the Moshe Mashiach, when we will have the Hoya Oral of Honor, Hama, the brightness of the moon then will be like the brightness of the sun now, because then it'll be revealed that Yisrael Varadaisa the Kutcha Bitha Pulachan. Halacha real quick, we were continuing with the halachas of tzitzis, and as far as borrowing tzitzis, now earlier in this siman, the Alter Rebbe had explained that if you borrow a talis, it's not actually chayev in tzitzis, which is why we said you don't have to make a bracha on it, but you could if you want to. There's an interesting story in a Gemara in Chulin of one of the chachamim who shows up in town and does all kinds of odd things that nobody understands why, and they bring him to Rabbi Yehuda, and one thing is Rabbi Yehuda notices the guy is not wearing tzitzis on his talis, and he asked him why, and the chacham says, the young Talmud chacham says, because it's a borrowed talis. So the same way, so borrowed tzitzis are not really considered tzitzis at all. So if you were to borrow strings, in other words, from somebody and put them on, they wouldn't be considered tzitzis and it wouldn't pass to the beged, because of also lahem, it has to be made from your own. Now, borrowed would mean if you made a tnai that the guy wants back those actual strings. But if not, if you don't have to bring them actual strings, then it's not called she'ela, and then it's called halva. In halacha, you have a difference in terminology between borrowing something where you're going to return the exact same thing or not. So then it's called halva, then it's considered yours, and therefore you would be allowed to put them on a beged, even lachtchila. Now, Tzedeva goes on to say, actually, even if he said that he is going to give back the strings himself, it'll only be only if the person doesn't know that you're borrowing them from tzitzis. He thinks you want to do something else with them, but if he knows you want to do them for tzitzis, and he lend them to you for that purpose, then you're allowed to put them, even lachchila, because then it's considered matan amanas lahachzir, and we already said before matan amanas lahachzir is valid, and you can even make a bracha on it.